Broadcasting live statewide from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. A guy who can still look intimidating in leg warmers, Pete Schwabba.
Hey, Wisconsin. Great to have you with me tonight. It is Thursday. A muggy Thursday. This is so crazy. I'll take hot weather over cold. But last night, even in northern Wisconsin, the sleeping was pretty brutal. I'll take warm weather over cold, but this is crazy. I literally pulled flannel sheets off the bed less than a week ago, and last night I had the AC on. So bizarre. I am Pete Schwabba, your host. We're broadcasting live from downtown Green Bay, muggy downtown Green Bay. Conrad, what is with the parking in Green Bay? I feel like I'm in New York City.
It's just that beautiful walk that we have there. Everyone wants to go down, take a walk down there, park their car on the street, go take a walk.
Don't they know we have a show to do?
I don't.
Honest to God.
They should know and they should have two parking spots right out front for us at all times.
It's really rude. I'm just saying. And we have a spot, like I'm complaining. We have a spot half a block away, not even, but it's the driveway you got to walk down and the ramp and then you have to curve. And it's just like, I don't know, I guess I'm just a product of this generation right now. I want to go right in. I want to park right next to the door and go in. I want no walking commute time. What are you going to do? Lots to get to tonight. We have a good show for you guys tonight. And how about this for well-rounded guests? Michael Alexander will be here at 7:35 to finish discussing his documentary Out of the Loop about the stand-up comedy scene in general and in Chicago. We just kind of ran out of time last week. He was really fun to talk to. So we'll finish that up. I've got some questions for Mike. He'll be here at 7:30. Brittany Merlot is going to address my weather concerns. There can't be anyone more upset than Brittany at how hot it is. Because she loves, I think Brittany would live in the North Pole if she could. She loves the winter. She's the snow queen. So we'll check her state of mind, her mental health, given this hot weather, and see what she has to say, because it is going to get really hot over the next few days, like 90s. So Brittany will join us at 8:05, and then Mike Clemens. Finally, Mike and I, we've been misfiring. He had to bow out a couple weeks ago for a health issue, but he's fine. We just dropped the ball 1 week, and now he was kind enough to join us tonight. It's always so much fun talking to Mike, and we'll get the lowdown on sports. Before we go any farther, tonight also, by the way, folks, is a What to Watch Thursday. So throughout the show, you can tell me what you're going to watch, because let's face it, it's Father's Day weekend. It is going to be hot. The best thing to do, and I'm looking out for your safety, is to sit inside and watch a movie or watch colored television. That is the way to spend. That's the way to get through a heat wave. So it's What to Watch Thursday. All throughout the show, you can text us what you're going to watch. We'll read them at 8:20, and you can send us a flurry of texts at 8:20 as well, and we'll get some recommendations and kind of have an open discussion about what we want to watch this weekend. What to Watch Thursday. Let's get to the Civic Media Scani Summer Text to Win contest, folks. This contest is blowing up, and we've gotten emails saying that people are just going crazy for it. Lots of entries. It's been really fun. So we'll probably do more of these. But for the time being, the Civic Media Scani Summer Contest is in full swing. It ends tomorrow. Is that right, Conrad? Tomorrow night's the last night, correct?
It is the last night tomorrow, yes.
Oh, that doesn't seem fair. But we have nothing to do with it. Tonight's keyword, ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for this? Because there's one winner every hour. I do that every night, don't I? I almost say the key word. People are ready to text, and then I go off on some tangent about prizes and how great it is to be a contestant. One daily winner, and the grand prize, why can't I say that? Overall, the grand prizes. Yeah, Fort Atkinson Cottage on the Lake, including pontoon boat, Lake Geneva stay at Harbor Shores, and a Door County stay at the Ridges Inn and Suites. Really cool prizes. After you text in the keyword I'm about to give you, I swear, Check the link. You will have more opportunities to win. So give yourself the best chance to win. And tonight's keyword, today's keyword, it's the same all day, right, Conrad?
Yep.
Okay. Tonight's keyword is, and did I mention? No, I'm just kidding. I would ask you to say the keyword, but after that fiasco last night, I don't want you any part of this, anywhere near the keyword. Today's keyword, ladies and gentlemen, is lawn. L-A-W-N. So go ahead and text that in and make yourself eligible for all kinds of fun and all kinds of summer fun with the Civic Media Scotty Summer. Text to win contest. Send those texts, folks. Keyword is lawn. And I will remind you guys again before the end of the hour in case anybody joins us during the final hour and wants to participate or participate, as John Candy would say. So, all right, they're rolling in. We've got, it's a What to Watch Thursday. We'll cover that. Sunday is Father's Day. Sherry just, did you read Sherry's text?
I did.
She says, hi, Pete and Calvin. All right, Sherry, here's why I'm not upset that you called Conrad Calvin. It would have been better if you called him Calvin with a K, but whatever. Accidents happen. Conrad got the keyword wrong last night. So you're allowed.
It.
Yeah, it's just an even give and take here. So I hope you're having a good night, Sherry. And Stacy Sue checks in on the stream and says, hi, Pete and Conrad. Hi, Stacy Sue. Get in on that contest, Stacy Sue and Sherry. All right. So I mentioned Sunday is Father's Day. Who do you think? I mean, do you think dads with more kids, do you think they should have more of a day, be taken care of? Do they deserve more? Because if so, Nick Cannon is the father of the year. This guy has 11 kids, like somehow with 14 different wives. I don't even know how he did that. That's not mathematically possible. No, he has 11 kids and he's got several different moms. And Nick, you know, Nick is very well to do, very likable guy. He could be a great dad for all I know. But why would you burden yourself with 11 kids? Some people could say that's more kids to love. Okay. But he can't live with all of them. That just seems like a crazy amount of kids to have. Why does it say 12 kids? That's wrong, right?
The article says 11 and 12. So maybe he had one during the article.
23 kids. Maybe he had one during the article. Twins Morocco and Monroe, whom he shares with ex Mariah Carey. Okay. Sons Golden Sagan and Rise Messiah Cannon. Now, I already hate this guy. I'm sorry. I can go with the 11 or 12 kids, whatever it is. I'm sure you're a pretty good dad, Nick. Your kids, their college is paid for, I'm sure. But what on earth are you doing with these names? Remember, this is like that reality show woman, that Trista Sutter, who named her daughter Blakesley.
Blakesley.
Yeah. Not Blake. Not Blakey. Not even Blake Lee. Blakesley. It drives me insane. It doesn't affect me, but it drives me insane. I'm not proud of myself. So Golden Sagan and Rise Messiah Cannon and daughter Powerful Queen. His kids must hate him. I mean, honest to God.
I think those might go down as some of the worst names I've ever heard.
And the teacher's taking attendance. Powerful Queen. Present. whom he shares with Brittany Bell. Okay, so that's 2, 3. Twins Zion. Help me, Conrad. Mixlodian.
Zion Nickelodeon.
Before I said he's the father of the year, he is not. These names, I'm sorry. I'm taking him out of contention. Zion Mixlodian. Lydian. And zillion heir, like the heir to a fortune. He's got that, you know, that, what is it? What does he host? The America's Got Talent or something? One of those?
The Masked Singer.
The Masked, oh God, no, I really dislike him. And daughter, Beautiful Zeppelin. Beautiful Zeppelin, the adjective is already applied to the name, like Powerful Queen. And then, and those are children with Abby De La Rosa. Son, there's more, folks. Son, Legendary Love with Bree TC. Oh, who is she again? I know that.
I don't know.
A golfer, isn't she? I don't know. Who cares?
Selling Sunset cast member.
Oh, I'm going to vomit. Okay. And daughter Onyx Ice Cole with Lanisha Cole. So that daughter has the mom's last name. All right. They're liberated, I guess, at least. All right. So that's one, two, three, like at least five girls. He is also father to two children with Alyssa Scott, son Zen, who died at 5 months old in December 2021. That's awful. After being diagnosed with brain cancer, and daughter Halo Marie Cannon, who was born in December 2022. But they don't give you her. Who's that? Who's her mom? Halo Marie Cannon. That's like the most normal name of Nick's kids.
Legendary Love, I think, is great.
Legendary Love. That's awesome. I hope he just calls her LL or Ledge. Ledge is kind of a cool nickname. God, I would love that as my nickname. That should be a question we do. All right, so happy Father's Day, Nick Cannon. I actually wrote a script years ago because he was in Drumline and he was great. And I wrote a script because I thought he was so good in that film. I wanted to cast him in this movie that never got made. It was called Rapid City Slim. And I thought it was a really cool story. And I never got to the casting part of it, but Nick Cannon was on my radar because he was really good. And I'm always amazed, like, this guy had an acting career. He was really good in Drumline. And then all of a sudden he's hosting this schlocky, horrible Masked Singer. Like, what a horrible show and premise. And people go nuts for it. That's just my opinion, folks. I know there's people that like Masked Singer out there, but I mean, are you out of ideas, honestly? Let's put a singer out there and cover him up so we don't know who it is. Ooh, I'm listening. Oh, lots of texts. This is awesome, folks. Keep those texts coming in. Sherry did apologize. Oh, so sorry. Hi, Conrad. She was probably using voice. That happens to me all the time, and the wrong words just come out. Or she's really hinting something, Conrad. She thinks you'd be better as a Calvin.
Or she wants Calvin to produce the show.
She wants a producer named Calvin. Then her world would be complete. Sherry, thank you for the apology. Conrad is not easily shaken, so don't worry about that. Tonight's text word or text keyword is lawn. So get your text in, folks. It's a What to Watch Thursday. Mike Clemens, Brittany Merlo, Michael Alexander at 7:35. Lots more to talk about next on Nightlight with Peach Wabba. Another guy. Here comes my baby. Here she comes now. Walking with a love. So now on Twitter, X, whatever, you can like things in private. Did you see this, Conrad?
I did.
I mean, I have issues with the whole social media thing. I think things really changed in this country. And I'm not going to get political. I'm just going to give my own opinion about how cowardly I think it is when people can just spew anger and vicious, horrible things with some meme or not meme, but like some avatar as their, in the, you know, Bob 8812, put your picture on there and your actual name. And let's see if you're as gutsy as you are from your world of anonymity when you're tearing down other people. And now that's just giving people cover when you say, oh, you can like it, but no one can see. Like, most of these people that are so filled with anger don't use their real names anyway. So who cares? And they don't seem to care. Now you're making it easy for them. Elon Musk, if that is your real name. To just be hateful. Let's have a discussion. That's what I like about civic media. Civic media encourages discussion all day. It's local. Let's look each other in the eye. Let's talk a little bit. Let's figure out our problems. What they just did on Twitter is say, no, keep it up. Spew your venom. Don't be held accountable to anything. I mean, get some guts and just say your opinion. You don't have to be anonymous. Maybe it'll force you to say your opinion more civilly. Just my two cents. Conrad, thoughts?
You know, Twitter's one of those apps where I don't think you'll see some change on the app.
No.
I mean, when Elon Musk took over, there was some change.
Right.
Added a bunch of paid services to it so he can make more money. But other than that, Twitter's one of those apps that you go on it and it can ruin your day just by looking at something.
I have to make sure not to look at it before I go to bed. And those blue check marks, what a joke.
Yeah.
Who are these people? The 8 followers and you got a blue check mark?
They pay what? I think it's like $11 a month to get a blue check mark.
That's so stupid.
Why?
I know.
Need that validation.
I guess so. It's insane. Anyway, that just really irritated me. Yeah, let's give people more of a reason to be cowards. So, all right. So I watched this show last night. I thought it was pretty good. Presumed Innocent is a new show on Apple TV, and it's Jake Gyllenhaal. He's the star, and there's a Michael Sarsgaard, I think. The Sarsgaards are everywhere. There's like 8,000 of them, and 7,099 of them are in Hollywood, and they're all good actors. But he kind of plays the foil. It's a really good I watched the first two episodes last night. And it's based on the Scott Turow book, which was already turned into a movie in 1990. And they've just kind of updated the story a little bit, made it a series. And I am sucked in. I hope it's as good as the first two episodes. That's the trend now. They drop two episodes, they hook you, so you have to wait like a dope every week for that next episode to come out. And you're doing the smart thing, Conrad, with Dark Matter. Yeah. I wish I had that kind of patience.
At the end of episode three, I was like, oh, great, I have to...
Yeah.
Wait another week. I was like, okay, I'm just going to binge it when the whole season comes out so I don't have to feel that waiting.
And, you know, the good thing about, like Dark Matter, at least, the episodes are almost an hour. So you get, it's not like 40 minutes. I could justify that a little more, but.
I just found it so interesting. I was like, I need to keep watching this.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. But anyway, Presumed Innocence starts off. There are some twists in the first two episodes where you're like, wow. And I don't remember anything about the movie. I didn't read the book. I don't think. I read one Scott Turow book back in the day. But he's was a former attorney turned writer. Could still be an attorney. I don't know. But yeah, it was good. I'm going to keep watching it. All right. So on this day in history, 1986, Hollywood history, that is, Rodney Dangerfield starred in Back to School, which hit theaters on this day in 1986. And there is a memorable scene between two comedy legends, Sam Kinison and Rodney Dangerfield. And the first time I saw Back to School, it's not a great movie, but it's shot here in Wisconsin. There's some great shots in Madison, some really funny scenes. And Mike Siegel was on the show last night, and he said all I wanted to do was find out more about Rodney Dangerfield when this film came out. And he was right. I got obsessed with his comedy and his I Get No Respect and all that kind of stuff. But this is a great scene between Rodney Dangerfield and Sam Kinison. Let's play that classroom scene, Conrad.
Welcome to contemporary American history. I'm Professor Turgeson. You know, a lot of people think history is just facts. It's just information about the past, but not me. I mean, I hold history very sacred. Sacred. The way the farmer looks at the earth and he holds it sacred. The way a Christian takes the Bible and he holds it sacred. The way a lot of people hold their marriage sacred. So I feel about it. So why don't we dive right in by interpreting one of the easiest events in the last 20 years of American history. Now, can someone tell me why in 1975 we pulled our troops out of Vietnam?
The failure of Vietnamization to win popular support caused an ongoing erosion of confidence in the various American but illegal Saigon regimes.
Is she right? Because I know that's the popular version of what went on there. I know a lot of people like to believe that. I wish I could, but I was there. I wasn't here in a classroom, hoping I was right, thinking about it. I was up to my knees in rice paddies with guns and Edward going up against Charlie, slugging it out with him. Well, like you, we're back here partying, putting headbands on, doing drugs, listening to the damn Beatle albums.
Oh, no! Hey, Professor, take it easy, will you? I mean, these kids, they were in grade school at the time. And me, I'm not a fighter. I'm a lover.
Well, I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helper. But since you want to help, maybe you can help me, okay? You remember that thing we had about 30 years ago called that Korean conflict? Yeah, where we failed to achieve victory. How come we didn't cross the 38th parallel and back to the Great Wall of China and take the first brick and nuke down back into the Stone Age River? How come? Tell me why! Say it! Say it!
All right, I'll say it. Because Truman was too much of a wimp to let MacArthur go in there and blow out those commie.
Good answer. Good answer. Like the way you think. I'm going to be watching you.
Well, good teacher. He really seems to care. About what, I have no idea.
Excuse me, Rodney Dangerfield. And Sam Kinison, great scene between two comedy legends. Robert Downey Jr. is also in that movie. Nobody even knew who he was yet. He plays like the kind of hipster, punky friend of the kid who plays Rodney Dangerfield's son in the film. And like I said, not a great movie, but really funny scenes in the movie. It's worth a watch, and it was shot in Wisconsin. It makes Madison look beautiful. So it is definitely worth a watch if you have not seen Back to School, which dropped today in theaters in 1986. Okay, so Scotty Summer text coming in. It is a what to watch Thursday. Feel free to text in what you plan on watching this weekend, folks. Are you going to a movie in the theaters? You gonna binge watch some telly? Let me know. We'll read them at 8:20. Brittany Merlot is here at 8:05. Mike Clemens joins us at 8:35 with a whole bunch of stuff to talk about regarding Wisconsin sports. And coming up next, documentarian and comedian Michael Alexander. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Broadcasting live statewide from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who wanted to be in porn but didn't have the acting chops, Pete Schwabe.
So... Carla from Baraboo. Aunt Carla says, no Think TV again. Working for this the weekend. Is that a reference to the Loverboy song, Aunt Carla? Maybe? Because I don't know. I don't get that. I don't get that reference. Conrad, you're related. Is there something going on there I should know about?
I have no idea.
You have no idea? All right. We need clarification, Aunt Carla. Tom from the 414 says, it's funny. Back to School did not see it at the theater in 86. There were Blockbuster DVDs and CDs. What a classic Rodney had vaudeville humor. I totally agree, Tom. And it's funny. Every once in a great while, I'll look for a clip of Rodney Dangerfield on like Letterman or Carson because I loved the back and forth between the host and like his jokes were funny. But they were very jokey. But just him as Rodney playing off Carson or Letterman. Or years ago, I think I saw him in Arsenio Hall. Very funny. So I agree with you, Tom. Great text. All right. So at 8:05, Brittany Merlot will be here, Civic Media meteorologist. We'll talk to her about what is going on with the weather. And we can actually get a quick weather check in Chicago tonight because joining us now on Nightlight is a documentarian and comedian. Here for part two of his interview, Michael Alexander joins us now on Nightlight. Hey, Mike.
It's a documentarian.
Well, you are. That's you know, and this is officially a mini series now because you're here twice. So I love it.
Yeah, you make me seem way classier than I am.
Well, documentarian. That's what I do. I could have said like doc filmmaker, but then they would have thought you like were in the medical field or something. I don't know. hey, so let's jump back into Out of the Loop. The documentary is called Out of the Loop. It's available on Prime, correct?
Correct.
And very nice, by the way, too, that you lined up pretty good distribution. Like it's nice when you put all this time and effort into something and you actually have a place where it's parked that people can go see it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm working on a project right now and we're gonna have to get distribution for it. I'm actually considering self-distributing it, but yeah, it's nice to have that lined up without a doubt.
What, how do you finance stuff like this, Mike? I think document, like I've raised money for movies before, but I feel like it would be harder with a documentary. Did you go to investors? Did you do it yourself? How do you go about that?
Well, for, Out of the Loop, I bootstrapped the entire thing. Like when I first started, I didn't have anything. Wow. I started that documentary and I think I borrowed some money to get some equipment, a lens, and I already had a camera and maybe a speed booster for that particular camera. And I really didn't have anything. And I raised maybe $1,000, $1,200.
Whoa.
Then for say maybe 2.5 years, I didn't raise anything else. That was it. And then we had a first edit for the film, but I didn't like the edit at all. And Hannibal Buress raised money for me for that edit.
Oh, nice.
He did the show for me. But yeah, that film was made pretty much on nothing. Unfortunately, that the money for that edit kind of got wasted because I didn't end up using that. Later on, did kind of a fundraising. Someone else did a fundraising, finishing funds for that film. And I think raised about $15,000 or so just okay. to be able to get color, sound, and then insurance. You have to get insurance on films, typically error of emissions insurance, to make sure no one gets sued.
Right. So,
whoever distributes it. So, but, you know, I am working on a project right now, which I've raised $200,000 on.
Nice.
So far.
Dude. Wow.
So far on the documentary. But, yeah, typically it's really hard to raise money for film and yeah, definitely for documentaries because documentaries don't make the same money as narrative films.
Right.
They just don't. Yeah.
So you did this film. You raised Hannibal Buress, by the way. So that joke he does about pickle juice.
Yeah.
Conrad, take a memo. Favorite. We got to find that joke. It's Hannibal Buress pickle juice joke. We got to find that and play that later. Is he a Chicago guy?
Yeah, he's from, oh my God, I forgot where in Chicago, but yeah, he's from Chicago.
I don't remember him. Did he start later and just was kind of a hot shot, or did he start doing it somewhere else?
Started much later. I think he started like in around 2003.
Oh, no kidding.
Something wow. like that. Yeah, 2002 or 2003, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Yeah. Mike, was there anyone that you could not get in this documentary that you tried to and you wish you did? I mean, you got such great names. You got Jeff Garlin and Bob Odenkirk and Dwayne Kennedy and Hannibal and all these guys and Anthony Griffin. Is there anybody you didn't get that you wish you had?
There are several comedians I wanted to get. Adele Givens as a comedian.
Oh, yeah.
That I worked with before, couldn't follow. She was amazing.
Oh yeah.
And I couldn't get her. It was a money issue there. She wanted to do the film, but she wanted a decent amount of money. Oh. And we weren't paying anybody for interviews. So even like people like Jeff Garlin, they did it for free because typically in documentary work, no one gets paid, and no one gets paid just because you don't want to seem like you're buying someone's opinion. Like there's an ethics thing when it comes to documentary work, even if you have that budget. But there were several comedians that I couldn't. Corey Holcomb's another comedian that I couldn't get. Sebastian, but I never knew him. He started much later, and he's a Chicago guy, but he didn't start comedy in Chicago. So there's, you know, a list of certain people. I wanted Arsenio. I couldn't get him.
What? Come on. He started at the Comedy Cottage.
Yeah, we started, I think technically he might have started in Cleveland, but yeah, he was a Comedy Cottage guy for sure. Absolutely. Matter of fact, because like when I wrote for a show, when I went to this Paramount where they shot the show, the first thing he did in the writer's meeting that day is he asked about a lot of the Chicago guys like Ted Holum and Ed Fiala and all these other guys.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's great. What about like Judy Tenute and Marsha Warfield? I remember, Mike, I did a contest at Zany's, and so, I think one of the other comics, I was in college, I was like 20, and the winner of the contest got to open for Marsha Warfield. So I was told. So I go up to Bert Haas about 2 weeks later, or I called him and I said, "Hey, Bert, just wondering when I get to open for Marsha Warfield." He goes, "The hell are you talking about?" I go, isn't that, it was like the prize money, but then I heard you got, the winner got to open for Marshall Warfield. He goes, that's not the case. Okay. Sorry, Bert. I'll see you around. I mean, it was just such a great thing that comics do to mess with each other, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Marsha was a sweetheart because I didn't know Marsha at that time. And Bert gave me, Bert House used to be the general manager, long time general manager of Zany's Comedy Club in Chicago. And he got me her email or something. I got in touch with her. I interviewed her in Las Vegas. She was a great interview. She was very, very sweet. Very talented person, incredibly one of the most successful comics out of Chicago.
And on Night Court, I mean, she had a great run on that show, and yeah, she was terrific. I was heartbroken when I found out I wasn't opening for her. So who is your favorite interview of all the comics? By the way, the film is called Out of the Loop. You can find it on Amazon Prime, and it's just comics talking about stand-up comedy and developing their act in Chicago. Before I ask you the question I was just going to ask you, are there advantages in your opinion, Mike? You've lived in LA for a while. I think you spent time on the East Coast, if I remember correctly, but primarily you've been in Chicago. And I ask Wisconsin comics this too. Is there a sensibility that you get there that helps you creatively or hone your act or give you an outlook of sorts?
I think a lot of people think that there's not a lot of pressure, obviously, when you, I mean, Chicago's a big city, but it's not New York, it's not Los Angeles, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that pressure of, or perceived pressure of that anyone could be in the audience, you know, especially in LA at the Comedy Store, the Laugh Factory, Hollywood, stuff like that, you don't have here. I can't say there's low expectations necessarily of comedians, but it's just not, you know, a place where, you know, people are here to make it. People are here to get training. People are here to get stage time, you know, in cities like, you know, Chicago or Cleveland or other cities. You know, you're there to get good and then move on to greener pastures, if you want to call that.
It's interesting. Yeah. I've told comics that were younger than me that, and even my son is dabbling in stand-up right now. And he's like, well, where should I go? And I said, well, you know, you could go to Chicago. There's a lot of stage time there. But there's also a ton of comics. And so I always liked the guys who, like, I think I told you last time, Owen Smith was at the Funny Bone in West Bend. There's not a ton of comics in that town. If you can get to be the house MC, you're working with every big name that comes through. And I know a lot of guys that did well like that, too. They just made great connections and then moved out. And then they had people looking out for them in L.A., too.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get, and you're right about that, then that does make sense. And, you know, Jeff Carlin used to house MC at Zany's, and I'm pretty sure that whether it was off camera or on camera, he said that it helped him grow quite a bit.
Okay.
And so if you can get a house MC job anywhere, yeah, it would absolutely, you know, you'll grow a lot faster than other comedians who are just doing a set here and a set there and a set here and a set there. And it is a lot of competition in Chicago. I haven't been around the open mic scene in a while, but I used to run a mic, and there are a ton of open mics in Chicago. And there, because of that, there's a lot of stand-up comedians in Chicago. But I would still say for your son, and that's great, by the way, Pete, because yeah. I believe that I believe talent is inherited. So, you know, so he stands a good shot. But I still would probably come to Chicago if I was living in another city, other than going to New York or LA. If I was just going for stage time, I probably would still come here.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great answer. So who was your favorite interview? My guest, by the way, is Michael Alexander, and check out his documentary Out of the Loop, which you can find on Amazon Prime. Great, really funny people. Jeff Garlin, Bob Odenkirk, Paul Gilmartin, Dwayne Kennedy. Who did you enjoy interviewing the most, if there was someone?
You know, I love interviewing my friend, Anthony Griffith. He's a really, really, really funny comedian. But I have to tell you something. Probably Jimmy Pardo was favorite interview. He was funny throughout. I mean, just consistently. There's a lot of material and things that he said that was funny that we didn't even use. I mean, he's just so naturally funny and so quick, you know. So I would say he probably was my favorite out of a ton of interviews that I did.
The great thing about Pardo is, like, when we used to work on the road, like, he would take me to open for him or whatever, and we were just good friends anyway, but how funny and how silly you act. Like, you're a grown man walking around a mall in Detroit or Grand Rapids or wherever. And like, no other profession do people do that. Let's go to the mall and hang out. Like, two dudes in their 30s, you know, or 20s, you know, it's just so weird. And then you just make each other laugh and do silly stuff. It was such a great time, you know.
But that's what The Row was like, too. Yeah. It was just about killing time. Right. You had all day, and if there weren't multiple shows, you know, if you're there on a Wednesday night or a Thursday night, you have one show at maybe 8 o'clock, and if you're a feature, you're doing 30 minutes, and you're going back to the condo or the hotel, and then you just have to, it's like sort of being in prison, but not when it comes to this, looking at your watch.
Oh, that's funny. How long was it, Mike, from the time you first turned on your camera till you were done and it was ready to hit prime?
Oh, it was years, because it for the first iteration of which was called Laugh Till You Wind It, from the time that I started pre-production to the time that it premiered, it was close to 3 years. Documentaries take a long time typically to shoot. And it took a while to get certain interviews that I wanted, key interviews. But because I didn't like that edit and I didn't try to shop it or do anything with it, you know, I had to put it on the back burner. I had to try to find another editor and try to find some money and things of that sort. So by the time that version came out, it was probably 7 years.
Wow. That, yeah, okay. 7 years. You laugh, but you are an official documentarian if you have that kind of patience. Mike Alexander is my guest. He we'll have a few more minutes with Mike coming up next on Nightlight with Peach Wabba on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are back, and we have just a few more minutes here with part two of my interview with Michael Alexander, a filmmaker, comedian. His film is called Out of the Loop. You can check it out on Amazon Prime. Great documentary about stand-up comedy in Chicago. I just noticed, Mike, you've got Rick Geezer is a producer, Dwayne, Tony Boswell. You really put your friends to work here. That's so cool.
Yeah, Tony was great.
Yeah.
Tony came and he shot probably with us maybe the first 2 or 3 weeks of the film. And he went to Los Angeles on my first trip to L.A. So it was a big commitment for him. You know, he came to Chicago to help, and then he flew to Los Angeles, I think, the following month. And he shot a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that I have still. Nice. So Tony's a great comic, and he's a great person.
He is.
And a great writer. Great writer, because, you know, hey, congratulations to him. I told him on Road Dog. I saw Road Dog. Did you see it?
I did. I'm in Tony. It. I play a character.
You play a club manager.
Club manager named Mark Schufelt.
Yes, exactly. I told you I liked your performance. I forgot
you did.
For a second.
No, that's right. Yeah, that was really fun.
In your moment, believe me.
Mike, last week, we touched on this. We talked about the film... Funny Business, about the club, all jokes aside. And that took me back, because I had the producer of that film on the show recently. And it took me back to opening the Chicago Reader or the papers and seeing where all the comics were that week. You know, it was always fun when you saw your own name in there. But I was like, man, this George Wilburn dude works every week, like, at all jokes aside. And I didn't know Chicago was as segregated comedically, because I saw guys like you and Dwayne and Ted Lied and Shay Shay. You guys all worked all the clubs. I had no idea that this other club existed or this other culture of stand-up.
Yeah, you know, look, I was sort of sheltered from it also. I mean, when I first started doing stand-up, I wasn't aware of any black rooms or a black comedy club circuit or anything. You know, I'm from Evanston originally, you know, north suburb of Chicago, so it's not like South or Southside or anything. And then later on, I became more aware of it. I became aware of All Jokes Aside and Bernie Mac and other black comedians and stuff like that. And I was, you know, I started in white comedy clubs. So those were audiences that I was used to. And I was really afraid of trying to adjust to do black crowds and black audiences because I was so used to, you know, non-black audiences. And, you know, it's one of the reasons that in Out of the Loop, there's a focus on race. And there's a focus on race because how I later felt about myself and the apathy, I think, that I had towards other black comedians that weren't getting the same work that I was getting, you know. And it wasn't like I didn't want, you know, other black comics like myself getting the work. Of course I did, but I was just in my own little world. And, you know, when I was making this documentary, I was just like, I'm going to make sure that I cover black comedians, you know, all jokes aside, and talk about race and talk about the fact that, you know, it wasn't a level playing field for everyone, because it wasn't.
Right. You have, who in your opinion, Mike, is the best comedian to come out of Chicago? Whether it's funniest, most successful, in your opinion, who is the best comedian to come out of Chicago?
Oh my God, that's so tough. Are you talking about as just a stand-up or as an actor, as a writer, as a stand-up?
Oh, wow.
Or just pure stand-up?
I'd say pure stand-up.
I have to say probably Bernie Mac. I really would. He was a powerhouse.
He really was.
There's a lot of great comics have come out of here, but just like they have the presence on stage to take chances, like he took chances. You know, there are a lot of comics who have a lot of stage presence who go up there and they kill. And a lot of times they're doing things that aren't risky whatsoever. You know, they're not, you know, taking a chance with audiences. They're not dividing audiences, which is really hard to have good shows when you divide audiences. And Bernie, you know, did all those things and still killed and still was highly successful. So I honestly, even though I didn't know him like that, I have to say that if I had to choose one comedian, it would be Bernie.
Yeah, he was like a bottle rocket too, man. It was like I heard his name one day, and 3 years later, he had his own sitcom. It's like, what? It's incredible.
Yeah. That's what people have been working for years at stand-up. He used to do stand-up on the CTA train.
I know. I love stories like that. That's a documentary, right? I mean, that's insane.
Yeah, imagine stand-up. It's hard to mind your own business on the CTA train. Right. Stand-up comedy.
Some guy starts yakking. You're like, oh, man, here we go. Exactly. I just want to tell you a quick story. I know Anthony Griffith is a good friend of yours. When I moved to L.A. and my son became friends with a kid in preschool, we became friends with the parents. And the kid's mom was very good friends with Anthony's wife. So I had one of those moments in life where we were invited over for brunch one day, and Anthony and his wife, Brigetta, I believe was her name, were invited over. And I'm like, I can't believe I'm having brunch in L.A. with this guy I used to idolize in Chicago, because Anthony was just like one of the nicest guys in the world, you know.
Absolutely. Still is.
Yeah.
And he's one of, because if you were going to say all around talented people, and that would be Tony. That would be Anthony.
Yeah.
If you're talking about actor, writer, comedian, and that would be Anthony.
Yeah, he played Eldridge Cleaver in a movie. I mean, how cool is that? Like, such an iconic.
Yeah, and Panther.
Yeah, and Panther. Hey, this was fun, Mike. I can't thank you enough for coming back, but I also want another trip down memory lane. I don't know if you remember this. You and me and another guy who was a friend of yours, I didn't know him well, we're going to get a 3-on-3. We were going to do the Gus Macker tournament years ago. And I don't know what happened. Probably one of us went on the road or whatever, but it never happened. But I was kind of intimidated. I didn't know if I was good enough to play in a. But remember that tournament? It was huge in Chicago.
I don't remember, but yeah,
you recruited me.
I recruited you for it.
You did. I guess I played one game and
you weren't there. You failed me. You chose a really crappy gig instead of doing it. Or
yeah, I took the money and ran like a thief in the night, buddy.
You took the $50 or the $75.
I took the gas money. I couldn't pass it up. Hey, thanks so much, Mike, for your time, and keep plugging away. I can't wait to hear how the movie's doing next time you're on.
All right. Thanks. My pleasure, Pete. Thank you.
You bet, buddy. Thanks. That's Michael Alexander. Check out his documentary, Out of the Loop. Really great. If you like just watching comics behind the scenes talking and being funny and not necessarily on stage, There's a lot of that in here, and there's a lot of truth to it about stand-up and about Michael's own personal journey. It's a great movie. Check it out on Amazon Prime. Brittany Merlot is here. She's funny, too. She doesn't have her own documentary about comedy, but I like Brittany. She could talk to us about the weather, and that's what she'll do. Coming up next on Nightlight with Peach Wabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.